This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for iPhone, iPad and iPod, Android, Kindle, Windows Phone, plus Mac or PC. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. And in the spirit of an enlightened future, TrekFan is absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every week from now on, yes, my esteemed host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, we all missed you. We were glad you were back last week, and I'm glad to say that you're not moving anymore, and you're here to stay.
Well, Chris, I am moving. I, like everyone, am moving. I am moving through space on the Earth, which is hurtling around the sun at
this
an incredible rate, even though you can't feel it. So we're actually all moving all the time.
This is true. And try telling that to a child and get the reaction they give you. But Matthew, that doesn't explain this get-up you're wearing tonight. That's quite an outfit. It looks like it's probably flame-resistant. Why did you wear that at the show?
Well, Chris, I was going to go hang out with Ben and Jake at the fire caves, and they're fire caves, right? So, I mean, I made sure that I had my fire-resistant underwear on.
Okay, that was a very popular product from Underoos, wasn't it?
It was. You know, it was really important to have fire-resistant underoos, especially when you were a superhero, because who knew what the evil guy was going to throw at you?
You never know, right? Well, I thought you might be wearing this tonight because you may have been a little bit frightened by the topic. We're going to be talking about the Paw Wraiths, the Costa Mojon, the cult of the Paw Wraiths, and the book of the Costa Mojon tonight, which kind of follows up some things that we've been talking about during our discussion of the final chapter.
Which, Chris, if you hadn't guessed, it's just an evil spectacular.
It's an evil spectacular, yes. Our cover art is us with our fingers arched.
Excellent.
Perfect. All right, well, let's lead into this by going over who the Paw Wraiths are. Now, anyone listening to the show probably knows all about the Paw Wraiths, but just in case, they're basically the evil versions of the prophets. They're sort of the prophets and the Paw Wraiths, whatever these beings are, they are of the same place, they are of the same people, but as is the case in any society or culture, you've got a good side and you've got a bad side, and of course, which is which depends on your point of view. But just like in Christianity, you have angels and you have demons, which of course, Satan was expelled from heaven, right? So now we call him the devil. It's sort of like that in Deep Space Nine in the Bajoran religion with the Paw Wraiths.
It really is very much the same. Apparently the Paw Wraiths were once, maybe they were prophets, maybe they weren't. It doesn't even say, you know, that they're just non-corporeal beings, much like the prophets, but they were cast out of the celestial temple.
Right. They were all in the celestial temple. So they come from the same place, which is key.
Exactly. Yeah. But for some unknown reason, and obviously my guess is some kind of rebellion, the Paw Wraiths are thrown out of the Celestial Temple and locked and banished to the fire caves on Bajor, which, you know, according to the ancient texts, basically they were false prophets. So again, very much like Satan and his angels, that they are leading astray. You know, Satan is called Satan, the devil, because he is the deceiver, whereas the Pah Wraiths are false prophets. They're deceivers. And so I think it's just very interesting because they really are. They're just taking lock, stock, and barrel from Christianity and the Christian idea of what happened in heaven before time began, that the devil is thrown out of heaven.
So. Well, they really are retelling that story late in DS9, right? That's where we're going with a lot of that. And of course, you say the Pah Wraiths are false prophets. If you look at it in the final chapter from the perspective of Kai Wynn or Dukat or others who are followers of the cult of the Pah Wraiths, which we're going to talk about a little bit tonight, they can see the prophets themselves as false prophets. So it does depend on which side you're on as to who is considered false and who's considered true.
This is true. I mean, it does depend on, you know, kind of that Obi-Wan Kenobi from a certain point of view. And yet we do see here that, you know, and throughout all of Deep Space Nine, that the Pah Wraiths are, for lack of a better term, they're black and white, they're evil.
Right.
There's no two ways about it.
Well, they turn their eyes red, Matthew. So
right.
you know they're evil.
Just like a Sith would right. become. I mean, here we go with the Star Wars references all over again. But it does really show that it's even what they want from Bajor too. They want, one, people to follow them and worship them, and two, they're willing to kill millions upon millions of Bajorans to get what they want as well. Right. Whereas we see that the prophets are, they call themselves of Bajor. They are for Bajor's good. They work for Bajor even in the worst of times, which this is what's really interesting, Chris. So the cult of the Pah Wraiths apparently did not start on Bajor, at least as we know it, till after the occupation, when Bajorans felt betrayed by the prophets, which again, very much like the Israelites turning to other gods because they felt like God had abandoned them. You know, we see that at Mount Sinai, the story of Moses, they immediately, I mean, he's gone for 40 freaking days and they immediately turn their back on God. We don't know about this God guy. Hey, Aaron, can you make us a calf of gold that we can worship? You know, because that God might have split the Red Sea, but, you know, we haven't seen him or his friend Moses for 40 days.
Right. What have you done for me lately, right?
Exactly. Which is what these Bajorans feel about the prophets after the occupation, after 50 years of occupation. Where have you been for us?
Right.
Also, of course, very much in line with the Jews during World War II.
Yeah.
Being in the concentration camps, and yet there, I mean, you know, you see from famous Jews like Corrie Ten Boom and Frank finding a way to find their faith be strengthened instead of, you know, destroyed. So
which we see in Kira, especially.
Exactly, exactly. And two, what we really see throughout Deep Space Nine is that it was the Bajoran faith that actually kept the Bajoran people from going crazy.
Right. Yeah.
From feeling like that they were alone. It was that faith that kept that society together and helped them be able to fight even
right.
for their independence when all hope seemed to be lost, because they had hope in even another world, another life, you know, like in a better world for themselves under the occupation of the Cardassians. So I just think that's really interesting. It makes for great parallels again to our world, our universe, when we think about the idea of what religion does for good, which is give people hope in a world that seems to be kind of hopeless, and all of those kind of things. Makes for a really great discussion. And again, this is what makes Deep Space Nine so special to me, is that it's willing to at least broach the subject
yeah.
that religion is not the evil that atheists have made it out to be on our planet.
you mentioned that the cult of the Paw Wraiths didn't come about until after the occupation. Now, at the same time, like, religion does do good things for the world, and it gives us hope, and it gives us, it can help bring the society together for good causes. At the same time, religion can also be used as a tool of control, and we see that as well. And we see it in obvious ways, and we also see it in other ways where you feel that gradually, bit by bit, it creeps into areas where it shouldn't be. There needs to be a separation, especially when you deal with governments. And when you look at the cult of the Paw race, they're like, for a reason why maybe this particular cult anyway that we see in Deep Space Nine may have arisen after the occupation, sort of in it's actually feels like it's in the years after the Federation shows up too, right? I think that some of the people behind that movement could possibly see the Bajoran faith as becoming too controlling, and they're looking at a way to try to push that out. And so they're looking for a secular solution to their problems because they feel like the faith-based solution hasn't gotten them where they feel they need to be after the occupation. And I'm not suggesting that the Paw Wraiths are the solution, because as you said, the Paw Wraiths as presented in Deep Space Nine clearly are evil and clearly are ready to throw the Bajorans under the bus for their own good, because they want to be worshipped. But for some Bajorans, they could be looking at that as a solution, and that could explain why this cult, which we feel probably should have existed thousands of years ago, has suddenly sprung up.
Well, and that's kind of interesting. You see, the Bajorans, they have come a long way. I mean, they used to have a caste system like they do in mm-hmm. India. They don't have that anymore. Their belief system has matured and grown. Again, at very biblical, you see in the Old Testament, you know, that you have some things that you don't have now, more than one wife, those kind of things, which, again, if you look through scripture, it's never glamorized or shown as being a good thing. It's showing being something God doesn't really like, but people do it anyway, and it's never a good idea.
Right.
So any of those kind of things you look through and you see it. So the idea that maybe they're wanting something different is interesting, although I don't know why you'd look at another like religious thing to look at. You know, I think you would turn more into somebody like Ro, where you're like, yeah, well, I don't want any part of this whole, I don't believe we need it. You know, I feel like that's kind of the attitude you might get instead of turning to the Paw Wraith cult.
Well, see, I feel like what might be the case is that while we look at the Paw Wraiths, especially because there is this book of the Costa Mojan, which Wynn has pulled from the archives, which hasn't been pulled in over 700 years, we definitely see this as it's just another religion. It's a religion of another type. So these people would be replacing one religion that they feel isn't working for them with another one, which both come from the same roots and maybe the same mythology. But they may also see that as, they may not see it as being a religion. They may see it as being simply the counterpoint to the Bajoran faith, like the absence of faith in a way, not for all of them, but for many people. So you might have a core with the cult of the Paw Wraiths who it is an ideology for them, and they're trying to actually flip the board over. But for the people who they get to support them, those people, it may be presented just as, we're going to take control of our world and we're going to get rid of this Bajoran faith that's holding us back and preventing us from progressing after the occupation.
I think that could be a thing. I think that's an interesting thought, but I think the way that it is portrayed on the show is always it's another religion. Like, these mm-hmm. are the true gods, you know, especially what we see with Dukat and his following and everything. But it's always kind of seen as is a that you've had the prophets wrong. You've been following the wrong gods. You know, this is really another religious
belief.
These aren't
the prophets you're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. See, these are not the prophets you're looking
for. We're going to get Star Wars in here as many times as possible. It's
so true. But it really is true. So I think that there are probably both sides to what you're saying. I think we only see one side on the show. But I mean, it does bring up this question to me, though. If the cult of the Paw Wraiths only came around at the end of the occupation, are you really telling me that there's been this kind of homogenized religious fervor in Bajor's history that you've never had any other belief systems whatsoever on your planet?
Well, at least
that you've only ever really believed in the prophets or nothing?
Well, at least in the last 10,000 years or so. Now, we know from the short story Horn and Ivory, which we've talked about on Literary Treks, that ancient Bajor did have other belief systems and that the Bajora was the group that won out and unified everyone. So maybe over the course of millennia, it became homogenized, although it's still kind of hard to believe that that would be the case. I actually think that the cult of the Paw Wraiths probably existed as far back as Bajoran culture goes. We just don't know about it because it wasn't talked about on the TV series, and therefore there's nothing in the canon. And maybe this cult of the Paw Wraiths with capital letters that we see trying to kill the emissary and trying to bring the Paw Wraiths back is just sort of a formalized movement because they have their symbol. You know, there's the symbol of the cult of the Paw Wraiths, and it's very much either you can view it as a religious symbol or you could view it as a political logo, a political element as well, one or the other. But they sort of formalized and they really started to get more support at this point in time. But for me, I have to believe that there have always been people who worship the Paw Wraiths.
Well, and I would think so, Chris. You even just said the Book of the Coast of Mojin, it hasn't been removed from the archives for 700 years when Kai Winn removes it. This book is got to have existed for at least 1,000, if not more.
Oh, yeah.
So the idea of the Paw Wraiths, the idea of the Coast of Mojin, which we can talk about, I think, right now. I think, Chris, that it makes sense that the Coast of Mojin is actually the prophet's name for the Paw Wraiths. It's what they call them.
Because there's confusion about that, right? We hear about them in The Reckoning. And also we find out a little bit about the Bajoran language in the assignment, but it's never clear, like, is Coast of Mojin, is that the name of a person from long ago, or is it the name of a group of people? And so you're saying that in the prophet's language, Coast of Mojin is the name of the Paw Wraiths.
Right. That's what they call the Paw Wraiths, which I think makes more sense for that to be.
Well, it does, because if it's the Book of the Coast of Mojin, the Book of the Paw Wraiths, that makes a lot more sense.
Right, exactly. And so I think that's kind of how all these things that have, you know, different pages on Memory Alpha, basically, all really work together and start to make sense for me, that there's a little bit more cohesion.
Yeah.
Now, I think this is also one of those things that the writers on Deep Space Nine did a great job of making you feel like there was more going on than actually happened.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that they actually told you in the show. Like, I felt like there was a ton of this mythology about the Coast of Mojin and the Paw Race and that cult and all of that. And yet, when you look at it, there really is very little. But I felt like there was more. Talk about amazing writing to make you feel that this sense of history and backstory and all that without actually really giving you that many details.
Well, think about how many stories have something going on the surface, but it feels like the story doesn't quite work because there's nothing underneath it. It's so surface level and you can't dig deeper to think about what might be going on and what might be the catalyst for the story that you're watching. Here, it's the reverse. There's a little bit of stuff going on at the surface, but there's so much underneath it that you could do another television series only about all the stuff that's underneath it. And you could focus on that for an hour every single episode to explore it.
Well, and Chris, I think that that's one of those things where they've done such a great job of and we've talked about this before, and I think it really says a lot, is that Deep Space Nine is mythology.
Yeah.
And what they've done is they've tied it to mythology here, especially the ideas of, and when I say myth, I don't want to offend any Christians out there, but I mean that in the kind of the way that Tolkien used the idea of myth, that it can be true. But they've used the idea of mythology, so like Paradise Lost, Paradise Regained, all of those great stories we have by Milton that really bring to life the idea of, you know, Satan being cast out,
right,
and all that stuff. They're using that as the foundation. So they're building on that and creating their own, they're kind of layering it with, they're giving it new names, but basically the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's why we feel like we understand it without having to have so much explained to us, because they're just telling the same story, but in a new way.
Yeah. And why do we keep bringing up Star Wars in this episode? Well, Star Wars is mythology. It's pure mythology, right? So in that sense, Star Wars and the latter part of DS9 have a lot in common, a lot more so than other Star Trek series and Star Wars. And also, as we talk about this, Matthew, you know, you said you don't want to offend anyone by using the word mythology. Now, of course, anyone who listens to this show regularly knows that you and I are on opposite sides of the coin here. You're a man of faith. I'm not. So for me, those stories are like mythology. And it's very interesting to me, but I don't see them in the same way that you do when we talk about Christianity and our faith here. But that's what's so interesting about how I can see it play out on Deep Space Nine in these stories as well. And the parallels are very interesting. And like you said, just like with Milton or whatever, you know, when you deal with mythology, there are stories that they could be true. They may not be true. We really don't know what's true or not. You may firmly believe that what's happening is true, what the story says is true, while someone else may not. Same here with the prophets and the Pawraiths. I mean, you've got Bajorans who some of them believe firmly, like Kira, that the prophets are true. They are the true gods of Bajor, while someone else, members of the cult of the Pawraiths, may feel that they're imposters and that these Pawraiths, the Costa Mojon, they are really true and that those stories are true. I mean, Wynn seems to think that the stories in the book of the Costa Mojon are true.
Yeah, I think, I guess personally, I think Wynn thinks the stories are true because they're going to give her what she wants finally. I don't think she really believes anything other than what's going to give her power.
Okay.
I think that's all she really believes in, which in the end is really the Pawraiths, because that's what they want too. They want power to rule Bajor.
But she believes the Pawraiths are real.
Right, she believes they're real, but you know what I'm saying? Like, there's a difference. Like, Kira believes in the prophets regardless of what they give her. You know, like,
right.
Her belief is in her love of the prophets is not based on what they do for her, but it's based on who they are. You know, there's a big difference in that kind of. It's like the difference between real love and just what it, like we talked about earlier. What have you done for me lately?
Yeah.
And that's very much how Kai Wynn and Wynn throughout her entire religious career has looked at everything from the prophets, and then she moves to the Pawraiths because it's all about what they're going to give her. And I don't think it's till the very, very end of the show, obviously, that she has any idea of what exactly has gone down.
Yeah, what she's gotten herself into, right?
Right. And there's a belief there at the very end of, I can't say that on the show, but you know, that data word, it's very much that moment of this. I completely screwed this up.
Yeah.
And I was completely wrong about everything. So I'll try and do what I can to help. And then of course she dies. So, I think that's what makes this so great, Chris, is that we really are getting something that's very deep and immediately familiar, because we are talking about mythology,
right.
And it creates a very deep show. And like you said, man, you could spend books talking about these ideas. You could spend hours talking about these ideas, and story upon story with all of these ideas, because mythology can keep going. And so this makes it really exciting.
Let me ask you if this would have changed your mind about the Paw Wraiths. They originally were going to call them the Kosamoron, because we find out in the assignment that in Bajoran, Kost means to be and Amoron means banished. So as we said, the Paw Wraiths were banished from the Celestial Temple. But if you called them morons, I mean, would that have weakened the story for you? Would that have made you feel different about the people who were following them?
Well, I mean, I already thought the people that followed the Paw Wraiths were morons, but now I know why, because they literally were morons.
That was the translation.
And they need to be banished.
That's right.
Exactly. So, yeah, I think it would have hurt a lot. I'm really glad that Renee asked Ira Stephen Baird, can I change this?
Yeah.
And he said yes, because moron really brings a whole new connotation. It totally destroys, and it would totally bring you out of that episode.
Yeah, so that was a good move there, because if they had stuck with what they had established in the assignment, the name would have been Kosamoron. And it would have come, I can just see myself watching it and kind of snickering every time they say it, just because it feels like, and I don't even mean that in being judgmental about the people who believe in this. I just mean that it would have felt really weird in the story, and I think it would have pulled you out a little bit. So it's great that they made that adjustment. And I think the adjustment works well anyway, because think about our own languages. We have things in our languages which would be similar to this, where if we use a certain terminology because of another meaning that the sounds have, would really throw you off, and therefore we create a new word. We use a different word for that instead. And so it also just shows more depth to the culture, and wish we could see that in more alien cultures on Star Trek, to be honest. All right. And one more thing, Matthew, as we wrap this up here. The Kosamoron was played in human form by whom?
Well, Chris, strangely enough, when it came onto the station, the Kosamoron, it could inhabit anyone on the station, but who does it choose but Jake Sisko?
That's right.
We always knew that guy was evil.
Sirach Lofton was in that episode.
That is true. And actually did a great job. I mean, that was a fantastic acting job, I think, on his part.
Yeah.
And on Nana's part. I mean, they really played that well. The idea of being inhabited by a being and all that. A great episode.
Yeah. Very important episode, in fact, for not only for them, not only for this storyline that we're talking about, but for Sisko as well. And the fact that he
definitely
almost had to give up his son. So
very much like Abraham.
Yeah,
so
yeah. All right. Well, we look at this, Matthew. Before we recorded the show, we were talking yesterday about this, and we said, it'll be a pretty short orb. We don't have to talk about this for an hour. And I said, well, you know us, Matthew. Jake Sisko's wardrobe, go. And then an hour later. It looks like we kept this one fairly short.
It feels good, Chris, to finally be able to do that. But I think that's one of the things is, you know, Deep Space Nine has plenty of great topics that we can talk about and discuss, and they don't all consist of talking for an hour. But the fact that you can talk for a good 30 minutes about the idea of the Paw Wraiths, the Kosamoron, the cult of the Paw Wraiths, the book of the Kosamoron, all of these things, trying to put them together and kind of understand them better, I think it just speaks to the strength of the show. And this is just one tiny subject.
Yeah.
But it's not all we've been talking about on Trek FM this week.
So here are some other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
With the Slushoverse, a lot of people are wondering, is JJ going to stick Slusho into Star Wars?
Earl Grey.
It's like Leroy Jenkins, you know, he comes running in.
Sir, there's another starship entering the zone. It's the Enterprise!
The Orb.
But here's the thing, they put themselves in a box with Dax. It's such a cool sci-fi concept to say that the symbiont is the 300-year-old slug and the outer host body, you know, they're mixed together, and that the host changes from
the Ready Room.
Because, I mean, what's the alternative if you're not going to do what Chris just suggested? I mean, what's he going to do? Get down on his knees and say, oh, emissary, I'm with you now? I mean, right. That's not really going to work either, right?
So allow me to ride my flaming chariot back to Starfleet. To the journey!
I am genuinely excited for this week's episode because we are doing a commentary on Threshold. Yes, you heard that right. Threshold, the infamous episode that everybody loves to hate, but I love to love it.
Warp 5.
But the fact that they had been in so many other shows before, that they literally were pulling footage from Voyager to help flesh out that episode, I think it's sort of like it's an Easter egg and it's a theme and it's also literally pulling out of another show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I feel like he always had the sense that the younger generation had a much clearer sense of what the future was going to be like than sort of the previous one.
Melodic Treks.
And these theme commander, I just thought brilliantly tied in with the original series because these were the original series characters, but it was in a movie feel. And he just did a brilliant job on his composition.
Continuing mission.
We have had long discussions in the office about how we can get an appropriate chair sitting simulator into the game. Unfortunately, that's such a specific system that would really only be used by Riker.
Literary Treks.
And then she leads him back to her place and says, "Welcome back to my place. It's a good place to be together." And Kirk says, "Together is good."
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
All right, Matthew, that was our first ever tag team lead-in to the network promo, I think, wasn't it?
Give yourself a hand, Chris.
All right. So everyone, tune into these shows and find out what we're talking about. All the hosts all across the network, you can find them everywhere that you get your podcasts, in iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone, Xbox, Zune, BlackBerry, Swell, SoundCloud, we're all over the place. Just look us up, Trek FM, or the name of the show that you want to listen to. And of course, you can stream from our website, and you can also grab the RSS feed. If you're in iTunes or on Stitcher, I'd like to tell you about our reviews promotion. You've probably heard about this by now. We would love for you to help us get more reviews for our shows. Now, we love to hear from you, of course, and know what you think about the show, but reviews are also important for another reason, which is that the more that we have, the more we can rise up in the iTunes store and on Stitcher so that more Deep Space Nine fans can find The Orb and more Star Trek fans can find other Trek FM shows. We also realize that if you're like us, you're probably listening to the shows when you're not near a computer and you can't really type out a review. So we want to give you some added incentive and we're giving away some great prizes, including a season of Star Trek of your choice on Blu-ray or DVD, an official Starships collection ship from Japan with a Japanese magazine, some Star Trek novels of your choice, and also a full collection of our alien art badges. And all you need to do to enter into the drawing is to review one of our shows on iTunes and or Stitcher. And you can review as many shows as you want. You can also review the master feed, and that will count too, both on iTunes and on Stitcher. Winners will be drawn at random from all entries received before midnight Pacific time on July 31st. So just go over, leave the reviews in iTunes and or on Stitcher. Do both if you want. That'll get you double entries. And after you do that, you need to visit trek.fm/review and complete the form that you find there. We'll ask you for a little information about who you are, what your screen names are on iTunes and on Stitcher so that we can match you up to your reviews. Also, if it's iTunes, which country you left the reviews in. And of course, we want to know which shows you reviewed. And again, this will run until midnight Pacific time on July 31st. Leave the reviews, go to trek.fm/review to actually enter the contest. And we're looking forward to hearing from you. And we thank you for your support of the shows. We've been getting a few reviews over the past week from this, and we're going to read some of those on a future episode of The Orb. Until then, if you would like to leave us some feedback, there are a number of ways that you can do that. You can go to Twitter, where you'll find us under the username TrekFM. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. On Google Plus, we have a community. Just search for us there. We also have forums at trek.fm/forums. You can send us a voicemail through the website. And if you go to trek.fm/contact and use the form there, that will come to both Matthew and me by email. Now, Matthew, when you're not testing out just how flame-resistant that outfit you're wearing is, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me doing literary treks, where we talk about the books and the comics of Star Trek. We have been slowly walking through the Deep Space Nine relaunch, so you can check that out. We've also talked about lots of other great books on there that involve Deep Space Nine characters, so I hope you'll join us there. And Chris, you can also find my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to juggle the thought of, oh, do I follow the Paw Wraiths, do I follow the Prophets, or do I just follow Ensign Roe, where can we find you?
Well, personally, I'm a member of the Cult of the Spring Wine, which is another popular cult there on Bajor. It's not really a cult so much as a wine tasting club.
You know, that's true, Chris. I gotta love the spring wine. You know, I wish that I could really get that business up and running, but we'll see.
We used to talk about that a lot, didn't we? Yeah.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Well, you can find me on Twitter as well. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook, facebook.com/CBrianJones. And I also have my own website, cbrianjones.com. And in addition to doing literary treks with you every week, Matthew, you can find me on a lot of other shows on the network, including The Ready Room, Continuing Mission, Warp 5, Matterstream, and Hyperchannel. So check out those shows and find out what I'm talking about over there. Before we let you go, we would like to remind you about our sponsors for today's show. First, there's Audible.com. They're the best source for audiobooks that you'll find anywhere. They have more than 150,000 titles waiting for you on their site right now. They add hundreds of new titles every single week, and they have some great Star Trek books over there for you to listen to. Some great classics. They also have the novelizations of the new movies. And you can get one of those books or any other book that you like absolutely free just for trying Audible. All you need to do is to go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up. Choose the book you want, get that for free, and if at the end of the trial you decide not to stick with Audible, there's nothing to lose. You get to keep that book, but you're going to love Audible. If you love podcasts, you'll definitely want to get audiobooks. And I've been using them for 14 years, so I can vouch for just how great they are as a service. Again, audibletrial.com/trekfm. Get your free book and support the show. And we really thank Audible for their support of the Orb and the network. Also, be sure to check out TrekFan at fm.trekfan.org. TrekFan is a Star Trek fan club, but not an ordinary fan club. They're a challenge. They have puzzles, real-life missions for you to complete. You can collaborate with other fans. You can really put your love of Star Trek into action and challenge yourself at the same time. They have this thing called Starfleet Academy, where they will send you a random Star Trek novel absolutely free, and you just review the novel. That's all they ask in return. They don't even want the book back. You can give the book to a friend so they can enjoy it and keep passing it along. They also have qualifications in communications, engineering, and flight operations. Members of TrekFan have gotten their qualifications in flying airplanes or doing other engineering tasks. And it's something you can do absolutely free because it costs nothing to join TrekFan. So go check it out, fm.trekfan.org. So great thing for you if you're a Star Trek fan and you love to really, you know, get your hands into something, jump into action. And we really thank TrekFan for their support of the Orb and the network as well.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the Orb.